Hello, horror fans. Welcome to Selling the Scream, a show about horror movies brought to you by one horror nerd and one horror noob. I'm Jed Donaldson, the aforementioned noob, leaving us with our nerd, who is, he's always here, my co-host. That's Josh, the big bad baby. Yoakum, how's it going?
It's going well. I've made a mess on myself over here, but that's not any different than normal. Benefit of being a podcaster, I guess.
Right. You sit in it,
and then you share it with the world. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay.
We're doing a movie today that I picked. So
yeah,
I've got to be good, right?
Yeah, you got to be on point. You did all the research, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, nonstop. I haven't stopped researching since I watch this movie 2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll get into that here in a little bit, but I've been up to some stuff past couple of weeks. I went to go see Suspiria, one of my favorite movies that we've covered on the pod. I recommend people check out that episode, but saw it with Goblin live doing the score, and they played a show afterwards, so pretty.
Yeah, I saw you posted some stuff about it. I was slightly jealous, to be honest.
it was really cool. It was definitely it's like the songwriter composer of Goblin, and then like kind of some hot, younger hired guns. That's like the touring Goblin. Sure. that he's brought in. I think there's some sort of like rift between the Goblin guys where he has the name and the other people like tour, but
like Gallagher and Gallagher 2.
rest in piss Gallagher. Speaking of it, like sidebar about Gallagher, were you aware that Gallagher, like when like the Latin Kings of Comedy came out and he saw like how much money like that movie made, or like that tour made, he decided he was going to do a Spanish language show in the LA area and like advertised it in all the Spanish language papers. And then when people came to the show, Gallagher does not know Spanish. He just learned like 10 swear words and smashed melons, and that was the show. These are the jokes, people.
I feel like he kind of missed the whole point of what the Latin Kings of Comedy were doing. But also, I respect the hustle.
Caca. That feels like such a Krusty the Clown move. Like, it's like he wasn't going to go to the melons until like 40 minutes into the show. It's like, uh-oh, bring out the melons.
Right. It's like, we're losing them. Melon me.
But yeah, that was it was an awesome show. They played like a bunch of themes from like other movies that they've done at the end too. And so,
I've never been to a show like that before. How does that work? Do they actually play the score for the film? Like it's quiet except for when the music's supposed to hit?
Well, I mean, like the audio's on, but they've like stripped the soundtrack out, and they're playing the soundtrack over where that would be. Because there was definitely people they asked beforehand if there were people that hadn't seen it before, so it like kind of needs to still function as a movie.
I was going to ask, is that distracting? But then I remember what the soundtrack for Suspiria was like.
it was pretty cool. Like they definitely had like a few like freak out moments in there where they kind of went wild, and they did a little improv at one part that doesn't have a soundtrack. When somebody's looking for Susie, when she runs by, they did a little like kind of funky detective music for the score that isn't initially there. So
I feel like it'd be a missed opportunity if they didn't add a whole lot of slide whistles that weren't.
Every time a pretty lady showed up on screen, whoop, woo!
I mean, really, just any time.
Also, my partner's father came to visit us, and it was my first time meeting him. I'd spoken with him on the phone a few times, and corresponded with him via email, but he's a.
I thought you were gonna say that you were like writing letters, like he's a pen pal.
Well, he writes multiple letters to my emails to my partner per day. So I was kind of prepared for that. he is a Benjamin Franklin reenactor.
And we went to
he brought his duds with him, and
he brought them with him to visit you guys.
Well, there's a
With you for a gig in town or what?
My partner set up something where he was going to go to a nearby city that has a statue of Ben Franklin and was going to like pose with the statue. And it was like the Visit McMinnville people. But that didn't happen. Like, she never like heard back from him, but we just decided to go anyway and just do it and take pictures just for us. And just so happened, like in the 5 minutes we were there, like newspapermen walked by, like, hey, here's a story. And
Ben Franklin.
a real man bites dog tail. They little write up on him. I'm sure, like, you know, it's a small town. Just like, they're probably just in their office, like, dear God, anything happened. Please.
Yeah, you think it was a happenstance that they just were there at that time. They were out scouting. They saw a guy dressed like Ben Franklin, and they're like, let's follow this and see where it goes.
But do we talk about Benjamin Franklin reenacted show?
I kind of want two more now. How do you get into being a Ben Franklin reenactor?
Well, you start in the Wild Bill Hickok trade, and then you age into Ben Franklin, apparently. That's how that goes.
That's straight from the horse's mouth, I take it?
Yes, yeah.
Do you need, like, any sort of experience or schooling to do this stuff?
He reads about Ben Franklin, but he was very adamant that, like, he doesn't just quote Ben Franklin. He like, inhabits Ben Franklin, yeah, so.
It's Ben Franklin. the womanizing and everything?
He's a bit of a rascal. He definitely had, he was making some comments here, so.
Well, I mean, good on him.
Plagued with syphilis?
Does he travel with a kite? Ben Franklin is recognizable, I guess, but how recognizable is he?
I mean, I'd say he cuts a pretty distinct figure. I think if you look down at a $100 bill and look back up and look back down.
Do a double take or a spit out your drink. A lot of people mistaking him for George Washington or Thomas Jefferson.
He's got the little like fur hat that he's got like in the one painting. That's he was talking. He was pretty happy and proud about that. But as I said before, we do not talk about Ben Franklin.
I think we talked too much about Ben Franklin just now. I thought it was going to be much more entertaining. No. It's not the Ben Franklin podcast. This is a show about horror movies, as I said up top. Specifically ones that Josh has put together in an attempt to turn me into a fan of the genre.
But record scratch.
No. In this case, Josh did not pick this movie. Josh would never pick this movie. And I want to apologize because this is the most boring piece of shit I've ever seen in my life. And I don't know why I recommended that we watch it for the show.
Good job, asshole. you picked out Barbarian, which, it's...
Totally unsurprising and easy to see where it's going.
Yeah, not like a writing exercise where the writer is like trying to surprise himself at every turn. This was a runaway hit in 2022, and actually I think we've sort of talked around it a bit, but like when we started this podcast a few years back, like there was definitely a surge in like the popularity of horror stuff.
I think it's been kind of rising, like a tide coming in for a couple years now. There have been some big moments, some movies made some noise, basically.
Yeah, but I think specifically, like, it's kind of crazy this year, because this is, like, you know, I think maybe a little tail end of 2021, like, movies coming back, but, like, really what's been successful has been Marvel movies, a random 35 years later Top Gun sequel, and horror movies. Like,
I think you're right. I think horror has been kind of having a moment this past year.
Yeah, and it's like it's nuts, like, that, you know, just the depth and breadth of what's been released this year. We've covered a few things, like we covered the Prey and We're All Going to the World's Fair. Mm-hmm. But there's been, like, you know, both flagship horror stuff, like the aforementioned Prey and like the Hellraiser reboot, and you know, that Halloween certainly did not perform as well as expected, but that whole franchise made $500 million, so like doing okay.
I mean, obviously we watched the first of the most recent Halloween.
Yeah.
But I've heard kind of diminishing returns on the second and third.
Yeah, I will agree with that. But I do think I liked the third one more than most people did. But there was also like a Scream movie to start out the year that was like all of January was the number one movie. And I think it's like we kind of live right now in a time of an embarrassment of riches. We're like putting together a top 20 horror film list for the year is like easily doable for me. And then there's still also like probably 15 huge things that I have not seen. Like I didn't see Terrifier 2, which like, right. Jesus Christ,
that is supposed to be fun.
And also just came out of nowhere. Like I had heard about Terrifier and I knew of it just because of, I pay attention to this shit, but like, that's just honestly, a movie that.
It was between that and this when I was thinking about choosing.
Cool. Yeah. And it's just like another like movie that has succeeded beyond people's wildest expectations, while like the new Spielberg movie flounders, or like Black Adam falls apart.
People were saying like people are throwing up and passing out in the audience, which, you know, you're gonna hype up your horror movies, but that had to happen at least to one person to get that byline right. I mean, maybe it's not a recurring thing, but that's the sort of thing you live for in a splatter movie like that.
Yeah, to have like the ambulance on site that takes people away or something, like the that's like the promoter's dream.
It's carny as shit, but I'm here for it.
Find fainting Steve. Or maybe they just have like one like super frail old guy who's the first guy who like passed out when the cowboy shot the gun at the screen. But
they didn't tell you that it was one of those fainting goats. He was just sick.
Just wanted to like say that up front, because I think this is a movie that like, well, first of all, like it was being developed for like a super long time. This was like written as a spec script nearly a decade ago by Zach Cregger. And you're a bit more familiar with his prior work, I think, than I am. I've seen a few Whitest Kids You Know sketches that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I was a huge, huge fan, but I have watched, you know, whether it be on YouTube or, you know, way back in the day before YouTube was really a thing, those videos would get passed around and things like that. Like, I was aware of his work before this, and I was actually really surprised to see his name attached to it, because when I saw him as, like, you know, writer, director or whatever, it was like, it's the same dude from a gallon of PCP.
I feel like it was always one of those sketch shows where like somebody would show me like a really funny video,
right?
And I'd be like, oh, that's really funny, and then I would watch like four more of their sketches and I'd go like, oh, you showed me the best one, okay.
Right. Yeah. they're a show that you would watch. I liken it to watching like highlights of a baseball game. I would never sit down and watch a whole baseball game because that's boring as shit, but you show me some highlights and I can get into that.
I could trick you into thinking it's like a spectacular, exciting game.
Exactly.
He ran up to that wall and jumped and grabbed it. Wow, this must be the thrilling, most thrilling game of all time.
Right.
It's how long, you say?
8 hours, you surely you jest.
But part of the reason it's sat around on the shelf for so long is that he and one of the other guys from Whitest Kids You Know, the Taylor Moore, mm-hmm. Who had just passed away. Yeah, Trevor, that's right. Died
this year or last year?
I think it was the end of last year. The thing I remember about that is that it was kind of sudden. Well, I think it was like an accident, like a got mm-hmm. drunk and fell off something. But that he had recently put out like a joke tweet that when he dies, he wants to be referred to as local sex pot. Trevor Moore, so people like ran a bit with that as an homage to him. But they did a movie, a raunchy comedy, sort of like at the tail end of the old school age of raunchy comedies, that was called Miss March. Are you aware of this movie?
The name sounds somewhat familiar. I may still have been at Blockbuster around the time when this thing was out. So
I think the premise is that he is a high school student who goes into a coma, and he's like got a girlfriend, and when he like comes out of the coma 4 years later. She's a Playboy, like Miss March, and he's like trying to save her from being a Playboy bunny. Like, I think it's currently sporting a 5% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Nice. So worth checking out.
Yeah. And it's one that I think he viewed as like an amazing opportunity that he couldn't pass up when he got it. And then it was sort of an albatross around his neck that he hated after it got made, and was like, I made this movie for the wrong reason. So shops this around forever, like all the usual folks pass on it. Finally ends up getting financing, but the financing he gets, he has to go make this movie, this set in Detroit movie in Bulgaria. And like, they pick out the entire crew that he's working with. They're like, we're giving you the money. here's your cinematographer. Here's your, you know, your DP. Here's your sound guy. Here's
a lot of fucking strings attached. I mean, I guess it's their money, but Jesus.
Yeah. And, but he said, like, honestly, it worked out tremendously that like the crew that he got, he felt like exceptionally lucky to get them, that they knew what they were doing and he communicated what he wanted and they seemed to get it right away. And, you know, it's maybe an outlier in that, but it's real interesting that really the Detroit stuff is just some B-roll footage that they get of like the neighborhood, but that most of the rest of it is filmed in this fake Detroit they built in Bulgaria.
Right. I feel like a lot of this was, you know, sets, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like the whole, they could build that street. They built the street that the house is on. Oddly enough, our second movie in a row set in Detroit. So,
I don't think that wasn't intentional.
But I think it's really interesting though. I think it's I think what we know that it sort of stands for, the death of the auto industry and flight and just these vast expanses of places where a city that lost probably 500,000 people over the course of 60 or so years. It's got these weird, spooky areas in it because it's, you know, it's the infrastructure and the city buildup is huger than it currently has. So
right, and I mean, they would look spooky even if you didn't like attach ghost to them, right? Like, it's just it's weird to see a place where people used to be and now they're not anymore.
Yeah, but it's also like, it's not like a ghost town. It's still like one of the biggest cities in the Midwest.
Yeah,
it's a shadow of what it used to be. It's like, and disproportionately, it's the very wealthy and the very poor who are still there. It's the whole middle class left. So you have these like pockets of like extreme wealth surrounded by extreme poverty on it. So makes a really interesting setting, I think. But this one, did you watch the trailer for this one?
I did. I saw at least one trailer for it, which is kind of like what caught my eye. Like, it looked like an interesting thing. Like, I was, what are they even doing with this? Like, they showed just enough to say, oh, something is going on, but they never got to the point where you saw what the thing was.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant how they do it. It's just, it gives you the setup. And then it, like, after the setup, it's sort of like the Alien trailer, where, like, after that, it's just, like, people running and screaming from what? You don't know, like there's tunnels, there's something.
Yeah, it's like basically, but, you know, there's like a cave system or tunnels underneath this house, but beyond that, no idea.
Yeah,
is it supernatural? Is it man-made? Is there a monster? Is it, you know, it, you don't know.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely amazing, because what does distinguish this movie is that it's just so many rapid fire, like, just tonal changes that all kind of come together and work pretty well. It's kind of a fascinating case study in that, because I mean, we'll get into it, but like the beginning of this movie, there's really only two characters, and like you know, you came to see a horror movie, and you know one of the characters is Pennywise the Clown. So like, what the hell's up with this guy?
I did not recognize him as that. Which, I mean, I guess is a testament to how good the job, the makeup job and the creature is in the movie It. Yeah. I actually kind of thought he looked a little bit like our hometown hero, Joe Burrow.
Oh, yeah. Bill Skarsgård's got a if like Joe Burrow could like follow one receiver by detaching his eye and moving it independently of his other one.
Seems like a skill that would be worth having as an NFL quarterback. Because you always hear about leading the defenders with your eyes and misleading them. What the fuck would they think if you could do that?
Yeah, why don't they test for that in the combine?
Seriously. I don't want to hear about football IQ. I want to hear, can their eyes look in different directions?
So yeah, the beginning part, we get the trailer gives you the basic setup. And the setup is that there is an Airbnb in an absolutely awful neighborhood, kind of a nice, cute little house, though, in like the middle of a bombed out neighborhood.
The house is really nice looking for the surrounding area.
Yeah. But it's been double booked. It's been booked by somebody on Airbnb and somebody else on like another app. So you have.
I wanted to call this out before we go any further. It was like the first impression of this movie when it started for me, because we were talking about Suspiria earlier. I thought that like the very first scene with her in the car with the rain outside and going into the car, I thought there was a lot of Suspiria in that moment. Where you had like the chaotic noise from outside, and then as soon as they got into the car, everything went away, and you just with her, it was very much like walking out of the airport.
That's what he told the cinematographer, like what they were going for, and I think you can definitely see this is a movie that wears a lot of influences on its sleeve. Mm-hmm. Is that everything that happens on the top side of the house is David Fincher, and everything that happens below the house is Sam Raimi.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of like when they're up top and it's this, you kind of think it's more of like a thriller. There's a lot of like gliding camera movements and like like a lot of precision. Like you mentioned that like the camera going into the car, like it goes through the window. Like it makes this impossible transition inside, like you would in like I always think of the one in Panic Room that where it's like the zoom out that goes through the handle of the mug. So it's like this impossible zoom out of that really kind of calls attention to how artificial it is.
Right.
It's got that feel to it. So you have this setup, and this was initially conceived. He had read a book called The Gift of Fear, which is about, it's this book written for women to trust their gut, to like pay attention to all the red flags when they meet a strange man, and to trust their instincts on it. So like he started just writing a scene where it was like, what's every red flag I could write? So we have this situation where they're double booked in an Airbnb. It's really too late, and stuff is too booked up because there's a convention in town.
Right.
He's invited her inside. She's there for a job interview as to help a documentary filmmaker. So she's got to be somewhere like in the morning. He's got this book. They both show each other their bookings. But there's just like something continually off about the situation, right? Like it's just.
Yeah. To me, I couldn't tell if it was so much what was actually happening, or just because I knew what type of movie I was watching.
Yeah, and this is a movie that I think in a lot of ways weaponizes expectations against you. Especially the casting. I think Georgina Campbell's great in this as Tess. And she's she really anchors the thing, and I think that there's if her performance doesn't work, the movie doesn't work. But I think the movie also like counts on how you feel about a couple of the other actors that are in it.
Right.
to kind of set things in motion. And one of them is, you know, I know you said you just thought he was like, looks like he's good at football, but
I mean, you say that in knowing, you know, that he was in this hugely popular horror movie from a couple years ago. You probably do have that expectation. Oh, this guy is going to be the bad guy, right? Because he was the bad guy already.
Yeah. And he's like, he's a really handsome guy, but he's also like, really, he's got those eyes that are just like a little bit too big for his head, and like he's like 6'12" and like
just looks a little bit other.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's a reason he was cast in as Pennywise. But they when she decides that she's gonna like stay there, and you know, sets up the conditions for, okay, will stay, but you know, they're gonna have their separate areas. And
yeah, this I mean, I wrote down that Keith is a yes. sweetheart because I can picture myself in this scenario, right? Like, he knows all the things that are probably going through her head, and yeah. like, maybe if I'm a woman, I'm seeing him reading all the things that he thinks is going through her head, and I see that as kind of like malevolent or a little bit of, like you said, a red flag. To me, it's like, I'm trying to make this person feel as comfortable as possible with a situation that is uncomfortable as possible.
Yeah, but there's like there's kind of that overcorrection too, yeah. right? Like the, hey, I know that you didn't drink something earlier, and I thought that's like because you didn't see me make the drink, so I'm gonna make the drink now, right? Like,
yeah, didn't want to open it without you in here because, you know, you could think that I put something in it, you know, which that had like that was not my thought, but of course it was her thought, right? Of course it was something that probably was going through her head, but now it's in your head too.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the by acknowledging it, it's you want to acknowledge it to get ahead of it, but it also like. Makes the situation creepier
right.
that you've acknowledged it.
Yeah, you were thinking like, of that, right?
That's the, you know, the old joke that I am not going to roofie your drink t-shirt sure seems to have raised a lot of questions that were answered by my t-shirt.
Right, exactly.
But the, I don't know. One of the big red flags for me is that she goes in to use the bathroom and the motherfucker's got his toothbrush charging on the bathroom floor. What kind of goddamn monster does that? Like,
right. I mean, so many other places in the bathroom it could go. Why there?
Like something else that's going on is like they are trying to reach out to the Airbnb people and they're not getting through. They're not having any luck. And I mean, you find out why, because this is like I think one of the ways in this. I don't think the social commentary is too overwhelming in this movie, but I do think it's there. Part of it is that this Airbnb, it's like managed by a separate company and owned by somebody else. And I didn't know this actually. My partner's father recognized that the number that they call is a Colorado number. So they're in Michigan calling Colorado about the property. It's owned by somebody.
Someone from LA. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I think in some ways like a commentary about like the current housing market that,
Oh, sure. I mean, it's not like Airbnb is not without its own foibles, right?
Yeah, that a lot of people are snapping up houses that, you know, they're pricing people out of the market who would want to like live in a home to open up an Airbnb.
Exactly.
Or they're shopping by algorithm. They're paying above rate what people can afford for this stuff. So mm-hmm. I think as we get into other aspects of this movie, like I do think that's a kind of key thing that this is an Airbnb that they're staying in. Also the letters in Barbarian, or you can spell them with the letters from Airbnb. Thanks dipshit IMDb trivia guy.
Yeah, I tried to anagram that. It's not exact. Come on.
But like, it's, I think one of the complaints that came out about this movie too is people were like, oh, she keeps making all these stupid decisions, and like, kind of like, but I also think she's sort of playing it like she's in a weird situation, but she's like also checking out his ID to make sure it matches the name that she told him when she gets the yeah. chance to. She's
she plays it pretty smart, I think.
Yeah, and like you said, at the end of the day, like if you don't know what happens, and again, because you know what kind of movie you're watching, they've only introduced a handful of characters so far, you're getting the creeps from him too. But like, actually, great guy. Maybe a bit doofy, but great guy.
he's a bit of a goofball. The part where it really started seeming like, oh, this is too much, is when he happened to be like the co-president of the thing that she was in town to do a story on. That's when it kind of became like, oh, this could be someone who's just saying things, right? He could just be saying the things to try to make her feel.
Or he's like, he knows who she is because he's researched her or something.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, that's the part where it pushed in the point where, oh, this is a little more spooky than sweet.
Yeah, well, she mentions that she's working with a filmmaker, and the filmmaker had made like a small jazz documentary the year before. And he's like, oh, I've seen that. And she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like,
no one has seen that.
Yeah, and he's like able to like mention specific scenes from it and
and
talk about it, and then talk about his involvement with, like, the, they call them the lion tamers, like the, I mean, it's kind of something else that's going on in Detroit, is that because there's these swaths of houses that are basically free, that people from the creative classes are fleeing there to start up, like, communes.
Kind of
one of the story that they're working on, that for the documentary that she wants to be hired for. But kind of throughout the course of the, like, once they get over this, like, initial
meet cute,
yeah, they actually start to kind of, like, connect a little bit and flirt. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the duvet trick does work.
Is this a horror movie, Josh?
Yeah, if you learned how to properly put a duvet cover on, you
didn't. I know, he pretends to be a ghost for a minute.
But yeah, she, like, you know, feels somewhat more confident in her decision to stay the night. But there's a little bit of a scare that happens in the middle of the night. You hear, right, like, some footsteps, and the door that she had locked is now open. And he seems to be experiencing some sort of, like, nightmare when she goes out to check, and he did not open her door, at least according to him.
Right.
But he's like,
what are you doing, weirdo? Why are you standing here looking at me?
Muttering in his sleep.
Yeah, he was having a bad dream, or maybe even a night terror. He was definitely vocalizing, and it did not seem like he was having a good time.
Yeah. So she goes to her interview, and the woman that she's interviewing with afterwards seems puzzled that she's staying in the place that she's staying. She got there in the middle of the night.
Yes.
So she has seen the house, but, like, it isn't until she kind of goes back the next day that she realizes, like,
basically she's in the middle of a war zone.
Yeah, it's like all the other houses have been abandoned to squatters, or there's just nobody there. And that's
boarded up, graffiti, if the houses are even standing at all, various disrepair. I like, there was, like, you get her reaction to seeing this place, and, like, there's kind of, you know, telltale signs, like, you have the graffiti that says death from below. It's really like, what the fuck is going on here?
And she gets somebody running and screaming at her, and she's already, like, on edge about this whole situation.
Right, this homeless-looking person screaming, little girl, don't go in there!
So, of course, she runs inside and, you know, flees and locks him out.
Yeah.
I think, like, one of the other big, like, thematic things in this movie, and, like, really in a lot of the horror movies that we've, like, watched, is that, like, it's no one listening. It's no one, like... It's somebody saying, like, no, this is a problem, we have to leave, and, like, the other person's like, nah.
Honestly, though, there are a lot of reasons why I would be looking for another place to stay that's not here after seeing the place in the daylight. The homeless guy chasing me down and screaming at me is one of them, but I'm not sure that I would have paid a whole lot of attention to what that guy had to say either.
But at this point, she goes down into the basement, and she starts doing.
Is there a light that goes out or something? She goes downstairs for toilet paper.
Yeah, and ends up getting locked down there. The door, like, shuts behind her, and we get, like, basically what the trailer has led us up to. We get that she discovers that there's, like, a rope near a wall, and if you pull on it, the wall pulls in. It's a secret door. And she looks down it, and nope.
I like that response. I wrote that down. I was like, that's great. She looked at the creepy dark hallway, just, I'm not doing that.
Also, you know, maybe a shout out to Jordan Peele, who kind of helped develop this movie a little bit too. So,
okay, yeah, I didn't think of that, but.
But she does end up exploring it, but she like sets up a mirror to, like, reflect light down into the hallway, so she's not going into the dark. And, you know, she finds a room with a camcorder, a stained mattress, a bloody handprint, and a bucket.
Yep.
Which
also nope.
Well, what I love is that, like, Keith ends up coming and, like, she can get out through a basement window with his help once he realizes that she's there.
Yeah.
I love that she tells him this and he's just like, that's normal basement stuff.
He's like, you're saying you want to leave because there's a room with a bucket? Yeah, this is the part in my notes where I wrote down, believe women, dude.
But he's got like kind of this dumb, like, what we know in retrospect is like maybe like some dumb chivalry, because he was already like earlier on like, no, you will be having my bed, my lady. I was just raised a certain way. And
yeah,
so this probably ties a bit into that.
Like, yeah, I mean, there's some white knight stuff going on. It, again, though, it's honestly, I would be going out of my way to be pleasant to this person as well.
Yeah, I think I'd be going out of my way to be pleasant to this person. And then when I went downstairs and like looked at it, I was like, oh, just like you said it was, I would be fucking heading for the hills. Yeah.
He goes down there ostensibly just to, you know, see for himself. I think I would be curious about what she saw also. So that means that I sympathize with him in that regard. But what I don't like is that he goes on to explore
the second further. Door.
Yes. He finds the secret door inside the secret door and just, I'm just going to look down here too. I'm not
going to tell her anything. An old dungeon master's trick, the secret door inside the secret door. Yeah. So, but like at this point in the movie, like really what the audience is left with when he's calling out, like for her to come down, when she like goes to try to find him, is like, oh shit, this is how he's going to trap her. Like this is the, he's luring her deeper into obviously, the lair.
He knew this was here. He was waiting for this moment.
Yeah. So when you end up actually finding him down there, like after she's passed like dog cages.
Right, the cages.
Like, it just keeps getting worse. Like that when she says like, oh no, we got to get around. We got to like turn around and get out of here. And says, no, that's where something bit me.
Something bit me. It was a bullet, wasn't it? Jumped up and bit you. No, it was a naked giant lady.
It smashes his head like a fucking cantaloupe. Speaking of Gallagher.
Fucking yeah, Gallagher. That's why you brought it up. Continuity. I'm calling it back.
Like, but if Gallagher, instead of using the sledgehammer, just walked up to the wall and silently smashed the watermelon into the wall as hard as he could.
I feel like times. Maybe she wasn't that silent when she was smashing his head. I mean, there's a lot of shrieking and wailing at that point.
Yeah, I attributed that some of that to Tess, but
she doesn't speak English, she's just trying to communicate.
Yeah.
A la Gallagher in Mexico. I guess he wasn't in Mexico. Whatever.
But I think something else that like I do want to shout out to for like why I think horror movies like are doing really well in the theater while like maybe the Oscar contenders of years past are not, or just like flailing, is like, I didn't get to see that in a theater. I bet that played like gangbusters in a dark theater.
Oh, hell yeah. With everything being pitch black, except for the screen, you get to have like the experience of her coming out of the blackness, just like that. Oh man, that would have been great.
And I think, but part of that is like, I think why, like, I think people now, especially with like so many streaming options, like are being more, they're not going to the theater, but they're being more selective about like what they want to go see in the theater.
Right.
And like, I'm sure, you know, I keep picking on the Fablemans. That's a movie I want to see. Like, I'm not like shitting on Spielberg. It's
probably really good, right? I mean, it's got the pedigree.
Yeah. But it's also like a movie where I'm like, do I really
see that in the theater? Yeah.
Is the communal experience going to build?
Right.
But it's one of the things I fucking love about horror. Like, I can go see like the dog shit, like Urban Legend sequel, and it kind of fucking rules to go see it in a theater because people are reacting and you're getting like,
you know,
this, like,
you know what? You're exactly fucking right. And I didn't consider that aspect of why it might be having, these movies might be having success in the theaters, because they are a lot of fun to watch with other people. Like, think about watching something like this with your friends and you see that happen. You guys are going to be fucking like punching each other in the shoulders and say, fucking look at that. There's gonna be a lot of interaction. There's a lot of opportunity for people to really kind of come together over something like that.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, like I get the same kind of vibe from like the Jackass movie. Like,
yeah,
you can't
see
what you're seeing, and everyone's in the same boat at the same time. I think that's really special.
And then maybe have we had a better smash cut in a movie than the smash cut from this like sudden terror scene to Justin Long driving down the highway singing Donovan's
Music? I honestly did not. I didn't understand what the fuck just happened when they cut to this. I was like, did my fucking stream skip to something completely different? What is going on? I did not. Justin Long out of nowhere.
But he's been like, he's been used like this a couple times, and like, it always works. You're always just like, I know he's a Mac.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Nobody fucking expects Justin Long.
I knew that Mac was actually like the asshole in that PC Mac situation.
Proves it.
He is an actor in LA. This is AJ Gilbride, and he's having the time of his life singing along a fairly thematically appropriate song about
very happy-go-lucky here with the top down cruising along the ocean.
Yeah, like zipping down the Pacific Coast Highway and just singing about how nobody's gonna fight your snakes for you, not the government, not the church. You got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Which Tess also has like the snake necklace and there's like the symbols and stuff there. There's stuff going on. Yeah. They're on Barbary Street.
If you want to look for it, it's there.
But he gets a phone call and he's just like, shit-eating grin on his face, like, hey, it's such and such from the show and such from the network. Let's patch on in. And
hold on before we get into this phone call, because something just occurred to me. We were talking about I wanted to before we got too far away from why horror movies might be doing better in the theater and stuff than other things. I would say that a lot of horror movies do a really good job with their trailers. Like we talked about this one and how, it was just enough to know that something was going on, but they didn't tell you what was going on. And I think a common complaint that I hear about more mainstream films now is that they give everything away in the trailer. Whereas a lot of the horror stuff that I've been seeing trailers for in the past couple of years really don't give much away in the trailer. They give you enough to know, oh, this is going to be something. I want to see what happens here. I think maybe that does have something to do with it as well.
Yeah. I think it's, I think there's a lot of things that we can talk about, like with horror kind of having a moment. I think it's specifically kind of even the kind of horror, like, I think this is a more fun one, but I think it also like, there's some serious topics it gets into, even if it like doesn't go as deep as it, like it leaves a bit up to the imagination, but like,
I mean, we're about to get into one of the serious topics that
it's because he's getting a call from the, I forget the name of this show. It's something really like trite and terrible, like Head of the Family. But he's the lead on this show, and his co-star, it's like a family sitcom, has accused him of sexual assault. Basically said that he raped her. And basically all we're getting for like the next bit is like everybody, the woke mob canceling him.
Yes.
But it's like, it's from his point of view. So like, it's just him denying stuff as, doors are shutting in his face.
Yeah.
So we're getting like his reaction to all this, but it never really dissuade. It's like, something happened.
Right. Like from a certain perspective, you could see this as trying to like build up a little bit of sympathy or empathy with this character. But it's clear that they never really want you to develop that sympathy.
He's the worst.
Yes, he is. Oh, he's the dirt worst.
He's like, even when he's trying to do the right thing, he's the fucking worst at it.
We're going to get there, but when he has his little character growth moment at the very end of the movie, and then immediately what happens afterwards.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. But I think it's like an important archetype to dig into, because he's a guy who really wants to think of himself as a good guy.
Right.
But he's fucking not. He's fucking terrible. But it takes a little bit, but we eventually get like teased out that why we're being shown this guy. is that he is he's gonna be involved in a bunch of lawsuits. He needs to like get money quick because he's living a very lavish lifestyle.
He's good.
Yes, and one of the things he needs to liquidate is his Michigan properties. Yeah. So he travels to Michigan. We find out that that's like where he's from. We also find out that he probably shouldn't have left the state.
Right. It doesn't look great when you leave the state with these kind of charges.
what isn't specifically spelled out, but like has been confirmed, is that this is a 2 week time jump. So as I refer to it, it's Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken. That's the standard 2 weeks designation. All right. He goes to the house, goes out for a night on the town with the writer director, and just in case you thought, you know, well, what about his side of the story?
Like, yeah, maybe.
basically just straight up confesses to his friend and like a humble brag. Well, I'm a persistent dude.
Right. She came around is what he's hanging everything on.
Yeah, yeah. She, you know, once we were like well into it, she came around.
Not like I'm the star of this show that she's trying to be a part of or anything. There's no power imbalance.
Or like has said no and these things are still happening and is now like afraid for many other reasons. Yeah.
Right.
It's real fucking piece of shit. So much so that when he discovers that the terrible, horrible murder basements, his first
laughed so hard.
this is maybe one of the funniest scenes in a film that I've seen this year. His immediate reaction is to see like if the square footage value.
He goes downstairs, finds the creepy hallway, and his reaction isn't nope, it's oh, let's see how far this goes. Then he finds the camcorder, stained mattress, and bucket room, and he goes, fucking sweet, can I add this on? Is this going to make my property more valuable? I gotta measure the square footage.
So he brings two things with him to the basement. The world's longest and somehow non-retractable tape measure that he's just fucking running around this basement. And like the second thing is like the smallest knife from the kitchen.
He's ready for business.
And like there's this scene with the tape measure, like I feel like there's so many things they're trying to set you up for with it, but he just lets it play out. He just lets it keep going.
He wanders past the room with the bucket, he wanders down the creepy tight stairs, he wanders past the cages.
And he just looks at them like ew. Like, not like, oh, this seems terrible.
Right. As well, how am I going to measure around them?
Runs by a room with a videotape playing on a loop about the joys of breastfeeding.
Right. I think that one did give him pause.
So he finds Tess, and after he gets... He gets attacked, he falls into like a pit, and she's down there and shushes him. And then we get kind of like our next big twist in this movie, that there's now a flashback to let us know maybe a little bit about what's going on with the house.
Right.
Did you recognize Mandy's own Richard Brake? This actor is the guy who was the guy making LSD with a tiger.
I did recognize the actor, but I couldn't place him from anything. Like he's one of those faces, like I've seen him in things, you know?
Yeah. And typically when Richard Brake shows up, you just go, fuck. Like that's, oh no.
He looks like he was typecast in this part.
Yeah. He's, I feel for folks, you know, it's probably like a good, decent guy. I don't know. Maybe he's a real fucking monster, but like, I assume the best, but he looks like a guy, like if you see him. He looks
like the type of guy who would sneak into people's houses to set up ways for him to get in and kidnap them later.
Yeah, he looks like if he moved in across the street, you'd be like waiting for him to come and knock on your door and let you know that he's like on a list.
Right.
But yeah, we it's it I love that, like, the whole color palette changes, the aspect ratio changes, because this is like the early 80s.
Yeah.
And we follow Frank around as he's just doing a little shopping, you know, diapers and plastic sheets.
Looking for baby stuff.
Is it a boy or a girl? Isn't born yet. And this does not, again, no red flag set off, like, oh bless your heart.
She's just trying to be helpful. She's a good Christian woman.
Also need shovels and lime.
Tarp. Lots of tarp.
And this is where that breastfeeding video comes from. Mm-hmm. She recommends it. And then, like you said, we see that he, I don't know if it's his actual job or just what he dresses up to do, goes in, tells somebody they've had issues with, like, the plumbing. And
well, I think the name on the jumpsuit, which, I mean, I guess jumpsuits are notorious for having incorrect names, that was like Carlos or something. So it certainly wasn't his name. Maybe I'm making an assumption here, but it doesn't look like a Carlos.
Yeah, we do know his name is Frank. He opens up her bathroom window so that ostensibly at some point he can come back later on and snatch her away. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and then he comes back, and this is like really the only all the rest of this movie is practical. The one digital shot, the grass, they couldn't get the grass to look. Get some digital grass.
Some spectacular grass.
But this we get a like little
Tim Burton and Edward Scissorhands level grass.
A little bit of the white flight stuff here. We get the neighbor telling Frank right, that he hesitates to tell him, but they need to, they're going to be moving soon because the neighborhood's going to shit. So I'm like, we didn't really talk too much about, like, other than like the letters being from like Airbnb, but like, did Barbarian as the title kind of get you a bit? Did you find yourself like, wait, what the fuck are we talking about Barbarian?
Yeah, I really was confused by what the title could mean. Like, what relevance could this have to a movie that's basically like a comedy of errors about an Airbnb being double booked? Where does this come into play?
Well, there's a couple things. I think there's like thematically, there's just like the idea that like that he's like literally raping and pillaging, that he is just like has moved into this place and helped destroy it like a cancer from within by his barbaric activities. It was also just the title that was a working title for Kreger while he was writing this, and just kind of he never felt the need to change it.
First take, best take.
So we go.
There is also the fact that Barbarian and Airbnb, the letters, you can kind of work them around.
Let's get onto IMDb. Oh, you've been beaten on IMDb. That's somebody, mm-hmm. another rocket genius has already on the case on that one. We now flash back to the present. And we learn that Tess has been surviving down here because she kind of figured out the situation. She knows that this naked, super strong woman just wants to be a mama. She just mm-hmm. wants to be, she just wants everybody else to be her babies and do exactly what she tells them to.
Yeah. Not give her any shit.
So this is put to the test when AJ is given a giant hairy baby bottle to suck on.
Oh, it's so dirty and gross. As bad as this is, though, what he gets for refusing is worse.
Yeah, well, if you won't drink from the bottle, you gotta drink straight from the source.
Right from the tap.
But it kind of, it gives that anger and him getting pulled away gives Tess a chance to, like, figure out where he came from and flee.
Yeah.
She re-encounters the homeless man who she now knows was trying to help her earlier, right. And just like, oh, just get the hell out of here. But she, you know,
the homeless man says something here that I wonder what he meant, because he says she's not even the worst thing down there.
Yeah. So it's Andre, we find out is his name. It's got to be referring to Frank, right? Like, I think he knows what's going on with Frank.
I mean, sure. But I mean, at this point, Frank is what, like 80, 90 years old?
Yeah, but like, I also get the feeling that it might be just in the recent past that he's like stopped doing what he was doing down there.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, and I mean, even the mother is afraid of him. Like, she later on will not go into Frank's room.
Mm-hmm.
That's just conditioning.
That's just good training.
Well, you kind of wonder at this point too, like how he's even taking care of himself down there. But
it doesn't look like he's doing a very good job of it.
But this is like, I think another thing that people get like upset about is that like, oh, why did she like, not why did she call the police? So, you know, maybe social commentary on number two.
Mm-hmm.
That a woman of color in a terrible neighborhood with no ID and who is filthy calls the police, and strangely enough does not get like sterling professional help from that.
Right. They really don't give her a lot of don't put a lot of weight behind the words that she's given them.
Yeah, and won't even bother to do like the cursory things that would prove her story correct.
Right. They can't go into the house because it's not her house.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they can see is that she broke that window. So lucky they're not taking her in.
But, you know, I think that's if anybody is surprised by that depiction of police, I urge you to like maybe look at some real life cases of like what happens to people when they like, you know, someone escaped from Jeffrey Dahmer with a hole drilled into their head.
Yeah.
And it was written off as a domestic spat.
That's a crack hole.
Yeah.
See those all the time. No, that's you want to say not all cops, but it shouldn't be any cops. And the fact that it is some is too many.
Yeah. I mean, I generally, the people who use the phrase bad apples, I refer back to the phrase that bad apples comes from.
Yeah. But just finish the proverb, right?
But yeah, like to get off on that tangent, but like, I think that the one thing that some people take some objection to with this movie is that after the cops leave and it's clear that she's not going to get any help, that she still like goes back to save Justin Long. Which like, I don't know how comfortable I would be like if I escaped a murder house, just like leaving, like she doesn't know that he's like the worst. Like she knows he's kind of
what a jackass. She knows is that what she has been through for the past 2 weeks and what he is going to be going through if he doesn't get himself killed. And she does not want him to have to do that. She's a good person.
Yes. She's also gotten a bit more information from Andre that he lives nearby and that she stays in the house during the day and comes out at night,
mm-hmm.
To like hunt through the neighborhood. But that he's got a safe spot. So,
right. Never been there before. The whole time he's been there.
But Tess is going to come back and try to help out. But first, AJ is going to meet Frank. AJ is able to get away and he gets to that door that that mother won't approach. So he thinks he's maybe found like a safe spot, and he finds a decrepit old man in a bed, a whole bunch of VHS garbage. which like, again, it's a movie that what is happening is awful. And there was like, I was talking to somebody at like our horror trivia recently who was just like, I was talking about how much I love this movie, and they're like, yeah, but the sexual assault, I can't do it. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. Because
right. This, yeah, exactly.
Basically, the mother is like a product of like three or four generations of
incest and rape. And yeah, it's
of having an incest baby and then a baby with the incest baby, which apparently, I guess, just like two or three generations gets you like Hulk. That gets you.
That is. Like, when it's all said and done, there are some issues I have with what's happening in this movie, and that is one of them. Like, the time frame does not seem to make sense for what's taking place. when our heroine gets there. And also, he's got a lot of tapes from a lot of different women, and we see evidence of there having been more people down there at one point in time, and now apparently all that's left is him and her.
Yeah.
But we don't see any more or even evidence of more.
I mean, it could also be that, you know, maybe Mother's just the only like mutant super strong monster one, so the rest didn't last too long after.
Sure, I imagine there's not a high survival rate, or you expect a certain amount of churn, I guess.
But AJ thinks that Frank is like in the same boat that he's in.
Right, he's just trapped and he can't get out.
So he decides he's gonna be like a good guy and save Frank. But
the turn over new leaf.
And like Frank asks for his table, he gives him his table and produces a gun to shoot himself.
Well, this is after AJ has watched some of the videos and seen what Frank has done.
Yeah,
and so basically says, I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to bring so many cops down here. And Frank's just like, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah. Because I think he says before he watches the tapes, I'm going to bring so many cops down here. And Frank's just like, away from the TV. yeah, but this arms AJ. So once Tess actually like breaks in, she also has to break in to get her keys too. Like she doesn't have the keys to her car. Right. So she breaks in to get her keys and encounters Mother and rams her into the wall with her car, and you know, just done, right? Yeah. End of the film, roll credits.
Right. Killed the monster. It's always that easy.
Yeah, she goes down to save AJ. AJ, of course, immediately shoots her because he's the worst. This movie just weaponizes Justin Long so well. Yeah. Like, again, another guy that like so frequently gets cast as like the nice boyfriend, but like occasionally takes these roles where like he really kind of twists that around, like the... His friendly face.
He actually is what you think Bill Skarsgård is.
yeah. But I don't think we've seen, I don't know if you've seen Drag Me to Hell. I know you've seen some of the other Raimi stuff, but
I have not seen that one.
Has kind of a similar function in that movie.
I didn't even know he was in it.
Spoilers. I actually do kind of think knowing Justin Long is in this movie is kind of a spoiler.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're totally right. It was a total shock for me.
But like, you know, Justin Long wants to again be a good guy, and he accidentally shot Tess, so he's like he's helping and carrying her out, and they find Andre, and they're trying to flee the area, and again we have to reassure
you're missing that Mother's not pinned by the car anymore.
Oh yeah, she's just, I mean, you know, I'm assuming like her corpse just disintegrated like a villain in a Castlevania game, just sort of
they should check for some wall chicken. Catch up that bullet hole.
Again, like maybe the second funniest bit in this movie, after just the smash cut to Justin Long, the assurance from Andre that like Mother's not gonna find them at his encampment, and then hey Kool-Aid.
this is so telegraphed. Like everything about this is set up for the oh yeah, that's coming.
Did you like the tear off the arm and beat you to death with it?
That is written in my notes. Tear off arm, beat to death.
So they flee up a water tower to get away from Mother. Before you know, AJ does some calculus.
Say that AJ is look, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but we went right past the part where he has his crisis
of faith.
Yes, his character development here, where he sits down and really says, you know, I got to look at myself and I got to take responsibility for my actions and own up to the things that I've done. And I want to think of myself as a good guy, but maybe I'm not. And I just got to, you know, try to do the right thing from now on. And then, you know, oh, yeah, rip the arm off, beat to death, then run up the tower. And fucking AJ is the worst. he's just so terrible.
He knows that she wants that Mother wants to baby them. So, you know, puts together that Tess might be the favored child and gives her the, like, the, this is Sparta down the side
of the... No, I mean, even before that, AJ's the worst because, like, he's got the firearm. Like, he's yeah. the one that could do something. And instead of, like, you know, taking his time and, you know, lining up a shot, he fumbles the gun off the side of the water tower, which leads to his decision to, I need to slow her down and buy some time because I can get away. You're hurt.
This is another moment that got like a huge laugh in the theaters, apparently, is that, you know, Tess falls off the water tower and Mother goes flying into the night to go
save her. She's got to save her baby.
Just a swan dive off the top of the tower.
That's what moms do.
But, you know, AJ has to go survey his work and, you know, let them know he's really a good guy.
I don't think that was his plan. He was just going to get away, but then he finds out that Tess is still alive, so he's got to he's got to redeem himself a little bit and say, well, you slipped and I tried to save you and that's not really my fault.
What had happened was right
yeah, she came around.
Before Mother comes, zips back up to life, she's not dead, and this death we get the thumbs in the eyes and just pulling the head apart.
Gross but deserved.
You know, it's actually sort of like heartbreaking here, like once you kind of know, like, Mother's,
you know what, yeah, she's just as much of a victim as anyone.
Yeah, and she's, like, trying to bring Tess back, and Tess can't go back. She's, like, severely injured, but she has the gun now.
And she also doesn't want to go back. I mean, there's that, too.
Yeah, you know, she doesn't want to break Mother's heart, but shoots her in the head instead, and just kind of goes walking off on her own. Like, she's killed her own, she killed her own snake.
Yeah.
Before we get that, the jump to the Ronettes song here, the Ronnie Spector, Be My Baby.
Be My Baby.
Which also kind of has another hidden aspect to it, is that, and it just, it being a great drop anyway, because you have this, like, tense ending, this crazy tense ending to the movie.
Right.
And then you have, like, this light, you know, great, great song, but, like, this upbeat, well, romantic,
and it also just kind of puts a song. Button on everything that's happening, because now you understand what the whole situation is, and the monster really just wanted a child, and it really just kind of, it pulls the room together like the Big Lebowski's rug.
But there's a darker meaning to the use of this song too. Ronnie Spector was married to Phil Spector.
He was married to Phil Spector.
Yes. And,
okay. All right.
So you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I think I got it.
Phil Spector, famously normal, chill dude. Right. You know, creator of the Wall of Sound production style. It's like the Beach Boys and the Motown stuff. But he married Ronnie Spector and made her stay inside their house under threat of death. And if she had to leave for any reason, she had to drive around with like a life-size replica of him in the car.
Yeah, perfectly chill, perfectly normal thing to do.
Yeah, bought a gold-plated coffin that he would frequently show her would be her coffin if she ever betrayed him. Yeah.
Again, chill, normal.
great guy.
Yeah.
So like a kind of a crazy button on this whole production for a number of reasons. There are other stuff you want to dig into on this one? I think we kind of,
yeah, you know, I don't think so. We kind of hit all the stuff that I think I've got written down, and you know, obviously I'm a big dum-dum and I miss all the smart stuff.
Or you just don't like go down the rabbit holes that I go down.
I mean, potato potato.
Yeah, I think this was deservedly like a huge smash. Like it tested, they were initially just going to put this out on streaming, but it's now a Disney film because it was acquired through like Fox and whatnot and
right. I saw it's going to be on Disney Plus in like Canada or Europe or something like that. I'm like, what, This is not a Disney Plus movie.
So Mother is a Disney princess, canonically. Yeah,
technically so, yes, all right.
they tested it with audiences and like oh shit, we got to put this in theaters. I think had a smashing return on it. I think it was like a returned like 10 times its budget. I think it's a really fun one, and this is like we're in a weird spot here, because this is normally when I would start making the pitch to you on it, the sale on it.
Right. I think we kind of got to throw that out for this episode, even though that's kind of the premise of what we've been doing this whole time. Okay. Just because this is, you know, a movie that I chose to watch and to put on this show. And it's something that I chose after I'd actually seen it. It wasn't like I did it sight unseen. I said I was going to find a movie to watch, and if it was good, I was going to pitch it for the show. I was hoping that I'd catch you with one that you hadn't seen before, but of course you've already seen it, because it was a big horror movie. It got a lot of buzz. Of course you watched it.
Yeah.
So I don't know necessarily that putting it up for sale is a valid thing to do on this episode. I liked it. It's not without its with issues.
Numbers on the board. I'm putting numbers on the board.
I think one of the issues that I actually have with it is it's a huge surprise of a movie. Like, there's lots of stuff that's going on in this, and everyone says, you know, go in blind, don't read anything, don't watch anything, blah, blah, blah. But I think that is great up to a point, but I think it can also overhype. I'm not sure that the amount of surprise in this movie lived up to the amount of hype that I think it had generated up until I watched it. But I think that if I had watched it earlier in its cycle, maybe I wouldn't feel that way.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about that. Some movies, like I saw The Sixth Sense on opening night, and I heard people like, you know, 2 weeks later being like, yeah, I figured out that twist. I'm like, yeah, because like for 2 weeks people have been talking about like, oh, you won't believe the twist in this movie. Like,
so it's kind of looking for it and kind of trying to find all the little wrinkles that could. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think. Again, like I think this is a movie I would have loved to have been in those like test screening audiences for, or like opening night, when like you have no clue what you're getting in for, and you get this like David Finchery kind of adult thriller upstairs, where it's, you know, almost kind of reminding me of like Red Eye or something like that, the Wes Craven Airplane movie, where like it's like flirtation but also dangerous, and then you get out into the basement and it's just like shaky hand cams and screaming.
Yeah.
Dead by Dawn.
No, I mean, and I definitely think that if you have the opportunity to watch this without having seen anything or heard anything about it, that's the way to go. Like, don't spoil it for yourself. Like,
oh yeah,
take this as my recommend. It, like, now if you've listened to this whole episode and just forgotten everything that we said up to this point, watch this movie without reading or seeing anything about it.
Yeah. If you really
you
want
won't
the
regret it.
If you really want the experience immediately after you finish listening to this episode, just go huff gas at your
bang your head against a hard surface a couple times, give it a good two or three, really make sure you get it in there, and then sit down and try to remember what I'm telling you to do.
Okay. I am gonna tell you this was a sale though. Sorry. I control those numbers, and I mean,
nothing I can do. You're writing it down and across the country. What can I think it's ridiculous, but whatever.
So I've got a Crispin Glover award for acting excellence here to hand out. And my God, I think if it was literally only just for driving down the highway singing Ricky Tikki Tavi, this is Justin Long, man. This is like it's been a while since I've so thoroughly enjoyed hating someone so much.
He has like the perfectly punchable face to begin with. And then he opens his mouth and he says the things that he says.
Oh, Justin Long. I've had a soft spot for that dude ever since Galaxy Quest and his days working as a doctor at St. God's Hospital.
He's kind of quietly putting together a resume as a bit of a scream king too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in the aforementioned Drag Me to Hell. He's in a movie that he's perfectly good in that we will never do on this show, Jeepers Creepers.
Okay, that's fair.
He's in Tusk.
Yeah, Tusk, the Kevin Smith drug-fueled movie.
Also maybe one that we're not going to do on this show because it fucking blows.
I kind of want to watch it. I just have not pulled the trigger on that one yet.
All right. So we've got our crispy. We've got our verdict. Let's talk a little bit about Next Time, because as much as we thought we had Next Time dialed in, it turns out we don't. We've had a wrench thrown into the whole works. Our good friend Jen Fett had picked out A Bay of Blood for us to watch, which as of November was available on several streaming services, and as of December is no longer available on several streaming services. So
I thought you were going to say she picked out this movie, but fuck that.
So Jed, I'm going to toss this back your way, and right. I'll give you kind of an elevator pitch on the three other choices, and then I'm gonna throw in another one from the same director. We have a Baba in there, so these are all Italian films that we can cover for Christmas. So maybe like keep in mind which one sounds the most Christmassy to you, I guess. So up first, we could go back to into a Dario Argento movie. We were talking about Suspiria up top. I'm going to go see that. We could see watch his giallo masterpiece Deep Red, Profondo Rosso, a movie that I kind of go back and forth whether that's my favorite or Suspiria is my favorite of his. It's really great, and I would love to do that. Also, like red, that's one of the Christmas colors, right? That's
one of the main ones. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the big ones there. Speaking of colors, we could also do All the Colors of the Dark by Sergio Martino, who we have not done yet, who's kind of more famous for doing like some more of the like sexy and lurid giallo movies. He doesn't do a lot of supernatural ones. This one kind of borders on that. It's kind of the Italian take on Rosemary's Baby. So we got all the Colors of the Dark, starring maybe to me the most like beautiful actress who's ever lived, Edwige Finnick, who's boy, she's a stunner. Really, really good in like all of his films too. The other one that we had up there is like, wouldn't you want to just open up a present and inside find some demons? We could do the movie Demons.
That is on my list.
Every year. Demons is like maybe the most chaotic choice of all these. It's a film about, people that go see a movie and then demons start killing everybody in the movie theater. And that's
all right.
It is buck wild. It steps on the gas early and never really lets out. That's also a good choice. I do want to get Bava in the mix, so we could do another early giallo of his. I see that widely available now is his not his first giallo movie, but I'd say his first like masterpiece giallo movie, Blood and Black Lace, which is about a killer stalking a house of high fashion after the diary of a murdered woman that contains all the secrets of the people there goes missing. Kind of establishes a lot of the rules of the giallo, and is just a gorgeous film. So if you wanted to honor Jen's original pick and pick a Bava movie, that might be the one. But I'm putting it all on your court, my man.
So you're really, really weighing that one for me. I got obvious guest choice, but I don't want to, so.
all equally good.
Okay. I think, to me, what sounded the best was the Argento movie and Demons. It's between those two.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to lean towards Demons.
All right. We're going to have Demons for Christmas. You are going to get a Bava. This one was made by his son.
Nice.
Roberto Bava. So
I still did it.
Yeah. And that was actually the one that Jen had suggested before she kind of like waffled out on like wanting me to choose it. So,
well, just throwing her under the bus there, Josh.
No, you picked the one that she wanted, so and I'm glad.
Happy, right?
Yeah, so sweet. Let's before we move on to our business stuff, is there anything that you wanted to shout out? Anything you wanted to recommend people dig into?
No, I don't think so. I was gonna say this earlier, like at the top of the show. I was like, I'm glad you do things, because I cannot contribute anything to that into the podcast, like.
I mean, I can recommend against getting like a terrible stomach bug, and also like while that is happening and you are all stopped up, having a dog that has the opposite problem and is just unleashing like, torrents.
Even if I had something to suggest, could it compete with my partner's father is a Ben Franklin impersonator?
Reenactor, my friend.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
There's a split. There's a. All right, well let's get into the business stuff then. Please reach out to us on all the socials, or at least Facebook, our Facebook group there. Just answer our robot questions. We'll let you in. Our email is sellingthescream@gmail. If you want to gaze into the abyss of Twitter, we still have an account that still seems to allow me to log in, just maybe with more owner promoted tweets about vague right wing conspiracy theories these days.
Buyer beware.
But we are Scream Selling on there. If you could also leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice. Spotify and iTunes do drive the most traffic. We do appreciate a rating or a review. It does say here that what they want you to do, if you've got a negative review, that really the best revenge, download it on our show onto the phones of your enemies. Just really, if they look down and they see our podcast, and you know how terrible our podcast is, and you do that with like 50 people, oh, imagine how effective that
burn. That's that slow burn.
So anyway, join us next time. We're gonna do demons. Jed, I think you're gonna like this one a bit.
I hope I'm gonna like this one.
Yeah, so I think this is maybe the type of movie that if we'd watched in our like high school days, might not have like the Dead Alive reputation, but it would be like in the conversation in the ballpark. So
I'm not sure if I should be vaguely insulted by that or not.
But I look forward to doing that. Until next time with Demons for Christmas. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, thank you.